Hour across Lincolnshire, some big thunderstorms, locally large hail and potentially locally damaging gusts of wind possible as well. Temperatures suppressed 15 or 16 degrees. In Wales, it starts off cloudy and damp. The rain will turn heavy here and we'll have some thunderstorms breaking out across the north. Again, some of these could turn out to be really quite nasty during the afternoon. Temperatures around 15 or 16 degrees. In Northern Ireland, after a rather cloudy start to the morning, we'll see some scattered showers in the afternoon, interspersed by some sunny spells. The showers being blown along by those strong winds, so not lasting too long. Highs of 16 degrees here. And finally, in Scotland, well, a reasonable day coming up, really. Most of the day will be dry and bright with some sunny spells and highs of 16 degrees, but maybe as high as 19 for the northeast of Scotland. That's the latest weather. Steve.
Chris, thanks very much. Now on BBC Radio 4, an Englishman aboard, discovering France in a rowing boat by Charles Timony. The author's travelling the length of the River Seine, using his rowing boat wherever possible. He and his wife Inès have reached the town of Troyes, about one-tenth of the way. From here on to Paris, the Seine widens dramatically, making it dangerous for small boats. Back at work, Charles has to plan how to manage the next stage of the journey. The reader is Mark Heap.
Travelling the next stretch of river involved going avalon along a BF. In fact, it turns out that avalon along a BF was something I'd been doing a lot since setting out. Avalon means heading downstream as opposed to montant, which means going upstream. BF is the formal name for the stretch of river between two successive locks. I learned this new vocabulary on a pleasure boat trip on a sunny Sunday afternoon. The boat, having gone back to the garage to put its feet up, I'd set about finding alternative means of travelling down the river. We found ourselves aboard the Renoir, a converted Parisian tourist boat that could carry about 60 passengers. Our captain was an enthusiastic chap called Denis. His wife, Marie, dressed in a stripy t-shirt so as to be sure that everyone would know that she was the ship's moussaillon or cabin girl, dealt with handling the mooring ropes and distributing coffee and biscuits to the passengers. We joined the boat at Saint-Mamès, a village that lies about 80 kilometres upstream of Paris, at the confluence of the Seine and the River Loing. The journey started with a brief trip up the Loing, past the numerous barges that were moored along the banks. Many of these were the classic sort of barge called a frissinet, the typical French metal barge with a characteristic blunt bow, a long deck and a wheelhouse at the stern. They are so big that, in order for the barge to get under the lowest bridges, the wheelhouse has to be dismantled. We swung into the Seine and set off, avalon happily in the sunshine, towards Champagne-sur-Seine, a place that, unfortunately, has nothing to do with sparkling wine. Here, the Renoir entered the biggest lock that I have ever seen, able to hold 12 frissinets at one time, though, as Denis reasonably pointed out, the chances of having 12 such boats all wanting to go through the lock together are fairly slim. I'd been wondering for some time now whether the river around here was clean enough to swim in, and beyond the lock, I got the answer to my question. In between a series of attractive houses which sat in well-kept gardens were areas of woodland where, amongst the trees, were bathing spots. At each of them, quite a few people, young and old, were taking advantage of the hot weather to jump in the river. The spots were obviously intended for swimmers because some had rope swings hanging from nearby trees. I got the distinct impression that the swimmers had been waiting for an audience, because as soon as they spotted our barge, they all rushed for the rope and set about throwing themselves into all sorts of wild swings and leaps into the water. Denis started offering the young children on board the chance to take the wheel. Soon, I was able to sidle up and ask whether taking the wheel was exclusively reserved for small children. Somewhat surprised, Denis handed me the wheel and gave me a brief rundown on the controls. Shortly afterwards, we passed close by a green buoy. Looking down into the water, we could see the wreck of a sizeable barge that had just been left to rot away on the bottom. The fact that the VNF, Voies Navigables de France, who managed the waterways, had simply decided to leave the wreck there with just a marker buoy rather than get rid of it, upset Denis deeply. He pointed out that each river user has to pay a license fee to the VNF and suggested that it would be nice if some of the money went on essentials, like keeping the river free of obstructions. A few minutes later, while I was still getting the hang of things, Denis turned to me and said cheerfully, "Je vous laisse les commandes. Je vais prendre un petit café." I'm leaving you in control. I'm just off for a quick coffee. Surely he wasn't going to leave me alone in charge of a strange boat and a whole load of innocent fare-paying passengers. And with a bend coming up, a bridge to pass under, and, most importantly, a large number of ducks fooling around just ahead. I got round the bend and through the correct span of the bridge and even persuaded the ducks to move out of the way by the simple expedient of yelling, "Get out of the way, ducks," from the bridge window. But then, all too soon, Denis returned, coffee cup in hand, to reclaim the wheel. On a quiet Sunday morning in July, we made the final approach to Paris on a journey that included two rivers and two counties. There's a new shuttle boat line which has been set up to link the town of Maisons-Alfort in the Seine-et-Marne département with the Gare d'Austerlitz in eastern Paris. This bus boat is called Vogueo. We caught the boat at its terminus on the Marne, just before the river joins the Seine for the run-in to Paris. We rejoined the Seine at the suburb of Ivry, on the left bank, and passed under the huge concrete bridge called Le Pont-Amont, the upstream bridge that carries the Paris Ring Road across the Seine. The first glimpse of the capital that you get from this part of the river is less than inspiring. Here, to say the least, beautiful Parisian landmarks are conspicuous by their absence. Hardly surprising. This area of Paris used to be one of the poorest quarters of the city. In Georges Simenon's novels, some of Inspector Maigret's most demanding adventures were set here, among the mean streets of foul, cramped houses where the chiffonniers, the rag-and-bone men, plied their trade. The banks were also home to gravel and stone yards where building material brought in by barge was stored ready to be taken away in carts to building sites throughout Paris. Rather than stay on the little Vogueo all the way to its final stop at Austerlitz station, we got off on the right bank at Parc de Bercy. I had decided that if ever a part of the Seine deserved being walked along as part of the quest, it was this final approach into central Paris. Walking also meant that we could cross the Passerelle Simon de Beauvoir, one of Paris's newest and most surprising bridges. The Simone de Beauvoir footbridge is one construction made up of two parts, which go two completely different ways, but which take you to the same spot in the end. You can choose to take the high road or the low road. Inès picked the single upwardly curving central sweep. I took the left hand of the two downwardly curving parallel outer paths. This alternative route allowed me to cross from one side of the bridge to the other underneath the central span without being spotted by Inès on the upper deck. Thanks to this, I appeared, as if by magic, on the opposite side of the bridge to the one Inès was looking for me on. Surely no other Parisian footbridge can offer such a degree of excitement. From there, it was only a short walk to the Gare d'Austerlitz railway station, where I was hoping to glimpse one of the Seine's less well-known tributaries. The river Bièvre seemingly tries to console itself over the fact that it is unknown to most Parisians by styling itself Paris's second river. But not a trace of it did we see. Research has since revealed that the poor Bièvre has now been made to flow straight into the main conduit of the Paris sewer system. Hardly a dignified end for a self-respecting river. I had decided that using ordinary public transport as part of my quest seemed perfectly acceptable. The only readily available river transport is a batobus, a boat that travels up and down the river in the centre of the city. The batobus has a route made up of a long loop from the Jardin des Plantes Natural History Museum, upstream of Notre Dame, all the way down to the Eiffel Tower. There the bus turns round and heads back upstream again. There aren't that many stops, but they are almost all conveniently located for the major tourist destinations, such as Notre Dame, the Musée d'Orsay, or the Louvre. The stop to watch out for is the one rather optimistically called Champs-Élysées, which is actually a good 10 minutes' walk from the avenue in question. Our nearest Batterbus stop was further downstream at Hôtel de Ville. To get there, we walked over the Pont de Sully to reach the right bank of the Seine. Once on the quayside, however, we found that a large number of people had got there before us. They'd all come not to catch the Batterbus, but to take part in one of Paris's best ever ideas, Paris Plage. Every summer since 2002, a stretch of Parisian quayside has been transformed into a holiday resort. Some 2,000 tons of sand is brought in by barge and then spread out along selected lengths of quayside. The organisers bring in full-sized palm trees in huge pots, as well as a considerable number of deck chairs, some hammocks, a vast array of sun loungers, a climbing wall, a dance floor, a swimming pool, some swings, a trampoline or two, a few places to play pétanque, some bar football tables, and much more. On top of this, there are information booths, first aid tents, bars and cafes, a library, and practically every activity, bar eating and drinking, is free. After only a short wait at the Batterbus stop, a boat arrived. We got on and grabbed good seats by the window. The Batterbus had a crew of two, a young, appropriately nautical-looking captain with a beard who did the driving, and a girl who checked the tickets and let people on and off. At each stop, her routine was the same. She would announce the name of the stop in French, English, and Spanish, throwing in a sentence or two about whatever might be found nearby. Saint-Germain-des-Prés, the stop for the historic Latin Quarter, so-called because the students at the Sorbonne used to have their lessons in Latin. On the left, extending a fair way down the Île de la Cité, we passed La Conciergerie. This used to be the Paris prison back in the grim days of the Revolution, but it is now better known to tourists as the home of the Saint-Chapelle, a 13th century Gothic masterpiece with the most glorious stained glass windows you can find in France, and probably anywhere else. When the boat reached our stop, we hopped off and headed back to the Pont des Arts, a footbridge over the Seine. It is, quite simply, one of the most wonderful footbridges across any river, anywhere. When you walk across it in the summer, or indeed any time of the year, you are treated to one of the best views in Paris. Kenneth Clark started his book Civilization by saying, when on the bridge, "What is civilization? I do not know. I can't define it in abstract terms, yet. But I think I can recognize it when I see it. And I am looking at it now." What more could you ask of a view from a footbridge? We were on the bridge that warm Saturday evening in July because we'd invited ourselves to our daughter Sarah's birthday party. We went expecting to find a single party going on somewhere on the bridge. In fact, we found 30 parties. The Pont des Arts has progressed from being the bridge most favoured by young couples for a romantic stroll to being the most fashionable place in Paris to have a party on a summer's evening. It was remarkably cheery, because each group of revellers is extremely close to the next lot. So when someone starts singing Happy Birthday, a surprising number of strangers tend to join in. From the middle of the bridge, Kenneth Clark would have seen the Louvre, the Institut de France, the Eiffel Tower, the Île de la Cité with the towers of Notre Dame in the background, the Conciergerie with the Paris Law Courts, the Pont Neuf, the future Musée d'Orsay, and of course, the Seine. Civilization? Most definitely.
Episode 3 of An Englishman Aboard, Discovering France in a Rowing Boat by Charles Timoney, was read by Mark Heap, abridged by Libby Spurrier and produced by Joanna Green. It's a peer production for BBC Radio 4. Next, we'll up the stakes by going all the way around the British Isles on a ship. This is BBC Radio 4. And now the shipping forecast issued by the Met Office on behalf of the Maritime and Coast Guard Agency at 0015 on Thursday the 13th of June. There are warnings of gales in Thames, Dover, Wight, Portland, Plymouth, Fitzroy, Sole, Lundy, Fastnet, Irish Sea and Shannon. The general synopsis at 1800, low, West Fair Isle 998, slow moving, deepening 993 by 1800 Thursday. Low, southeast Shannon 998, moving steadily northeast, losing its identity. The area forecasts for the next 24 hours. Viking, North Utsira, South Utsira 40s. Southeasterly, veering southwesterly 4 or 5, increasing 6 at times. Rain or showers, fog patches, moderate, occasionally very poor. Cromarty, 4th, south or southwest, 4 or 5, occasionally 6 later, rain or showers, moderate or good. Tyne, Dogger, Fisher, south or southwest, veering west.